Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
If you lost Survivor and you're feeling down, David and Jessica will turn it around. They'll break down the rules and they'll show you how. You played yourself and got voted out. This is why Blank lost. And this is why Blank lost. Oh baby, this is why Blank lost.
Welcome back to another special edition of Why Blank Lost, as we continue our series of Why Blank One podcasts in parallel with the RHAP Survivor Season Rankings. I'm David Bloomberg, and I've got this hot cup of lava that I'll be enjoying while I'm joined, of course, by someone who is not a deceptive lying bitch, my co-host Jessica Lewis.
Wow, I love this introduction. Thank you for saying that I am not a deceptive lying bitch. I promise.
Yeah, I mean, that's such a nice thing to say.
I won't say the same about you, right?
Ooh, ouch.
No, I said I won't. Okay, so I won't say that you are a deceptive lying bitch either.
Okay, yes.
Uh-huh. Those double negatives, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
But yes, this, I must say, was a fantastic rewatch. I'm very excited to be here talking about Vanuatu. I'm like incredibly excited, actually.
Well, good, good. And and I, just so people know what shirt I'm wearing here today, because I know that's, you know, always interesting.
Of course.
I'm wearing, this may be a tip off as to, the coming podcast, but I'm wearing the shirt that you got me, that Chris should have been wearing at the end of the finale.
Yes.
So here it is. This is. And for those of you on audio, it's the one from the RENAP WrestleMania. It says why you lost. And it points to the person wearing it. In this case, me. If Chris had worn it, then it would have been Chris.
Yes.
But yes, we're here to discuss why Chris won Survivor Vanuatu way back in 2004.
Oh my gosh, I could not believe how far back we went on this one. And I was so excited about it because, as I've mentioned before, I am a big old school Survivor lover. There's something about it that I enjoy so much more than the most recent seasons. There's a rawness to it that doesn't exist anymore. So many great things. And so I was very excited to go so far back on the Survivor timeline to discuss this win.
Yeah. Now, as we've mentioned, we're focusing on two groups of winners for these podcasts, those who make us wonder how they won and those who did such a good job that we think it's worth discussing them. We picked this one because I wanted to go back and look at Chris's win again, as my recollection is that he deserves to be in the second group.
Mm-hmm.
But there's also the question of how the heck he managed to win when he was one man against an alliance of all the women.
Yes. And also, he doesn't seem to be a very highly respected winner either.
Mm-mm.
And I must say, on the rewatch, I was curious how so many people have come to that conclusion, which we'll discuss how he played. But it really, in my mind, showed that on my rewatch, he is a much deserving winner. For a lot of reasons. So I think this will be an interesting one to discuss because he does seem to be kind of a controversial figure as to, you know, where does Chris fall?
Yeah. And I think part of that is Rob mentioned on the main countdown podcast that it seems like Jeff Probst just doesn't like him.
Mm.
So it's not clear why. Maybe it's because he backstabbed is, quote, little sister Julie, who would then become Jeff's girlfriend.
Mm-hmm.
And then not. But, you know, maybe that was what set things in motion. It's hard to say.
Yeah.
Maybe it was just that, as we'll find out, Chris proved Jeff wrong on a number of things. Jeff criticized him for things, and then Chris ended up winning. So,
My daughter was actually imitating Jeff as he was reading the votes, because she was watching the finale with me, and I had filled her in on the Julie backstory with Jeff. And so she was mimicking Jeff, like opening the votes, going, "Chris," getting like more and more angry as he was going on. I thought it was quite funny. So I'm curious when, and that's another thing too on the rewatch, was knowing that that's what ended up happening. When exactly did it like cross to that level or that point? Because she was clearly very flirtatious with Jeff the entire season. So I'm wondering at what point did Jeff like hate on Chris, maybe because of Julie.
Yeah. We'll never know. We'll never know. But one thing we will know is why he won, because we will follow the same path that we always do during normal Survivor seasons, which is comparing how he played to the rules I originally wrote way back after season one. And of course, looking at Twyla's play as well to see how much her actions may have contributed to the win for Chris. Anyone who wants to refamiliarize yourself with the rules, you can check out the most recent version at robhasawebsite.com/blog/survivor rules. Now, these were not the same rules that were in play when Chris was playing. There were some different things, like I was looking and, you know, the third rule was not be flexible. That was much lower down, and something else was higher up. And so, but, you know, we've now gotten those rules exactly where they should be, and we made them shorter and more colorful and put them on a poster.
We did. If I can point the right way. There it is.
Yes. And so anyone can get that at tinyurl.com/DavidRulesPoster2.
Yes. And if you happen to live outside of the United States, you can certainly DM me through Twitter. My Twitter handle is here. If I can actually point at the right thing. I'll just go this way, and I can certainly make arrangements for you. We just sent one off to the UK, so it's certainly something that we can do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, in addition to the poster, we have another way you can get the rules, so you always have them with you in T-shirt form.
That's right.
And there you can go, or to get that, you can go to robhasawebsite.com or robhasapodcast.com. Click on the merch link near the top. That will take you to the newer, larger RHAP shop. You can scroll through or search and find not just that design, but two different designs. There's the classic poster and the newer checklist design, which you can also get on a mug.
Yes.
Which you can use to drink your hot lava.
That really cracked me up.
Yes. Yes. No, that is false. If you drank lava, you would die.
That was amazing. That was amazing.
But if not your lava, then your kava.
Yes.
Yeah.
So many crazy things. Listen, can we just spend a little bit of time on the historical aspect that we were, or the cultural aspect, I guess would be a better thing to say, that we were able to experience with this season. And I really feel like this is one of the downfalls of having the repeat Fijian country being utilized for Survivor, because I really love learning about all of these different places and the cultures that are associated with it. And this season in particular, we got to see a lot of that. And it was really quite, I think, fascinating. And I think if I was one of those survivors there, very humbling, because they had an opportunity to go to an island where people literally gave their lives up for their culture. And it just really, wow, all around incredible. And so I think that we miss out on that now, with it being repeat.
Yeah, but we also miss out on the sexism of that particular culture, where they stick the men in this vaunted position and the women are over here, you know, by the pigs or something.
Right.
So,
and I'm not saying that that's okay, but it is interesting to have those opportunities to learn about other cultures and have it integrated into the show the way that it was.
Yes, that's true. That's true. Now, so in addition to that, a few other things that we wanted to talk about before we get to the rules. I wanted to talk about Amy because I had forgotten a couple things about Amy. One, I thought Amy and Eliza were much closer this season. That's what my memory was telling me. My memory was wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And I also had forgotten how much of a villain Amy was this season.
Yeah.
You know, looking back at the articles, which I do after I watch, because I don't want to bias myself. So I watch, take my notes, and then I look back at the old articles from my website. She was not well-liked in general, in part because of her pompous attitude.
Yeah.
You know, and I was actually chatting back and forth with one of my writers, and I was like, well, actually, he really disliked Eliza. And I said, man, you did not like Eliza. He's like, no, I didn't. And I didn't like Amy either. And he remembered better than I did. He's like, did you see that particular episode where Amy said this in the Survivor Insider? I was like, wow. And one thing was, he's like, yeah, she was a barista. And she was acting like she was the queen.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I had forgotten that Amy was so aggressive as well. And in my memory, I had Eliza as being much more aggressive and unfriendly. And there was always something about Eliza. And maybe it's because of the seasons that she did later. And, you know, we got to see more of Eliza. But I almost in my head had them switched with how they were. How they actually came across. And I was actually like pleasantly surprised watching Eliza. She was quite enjoyable. And not that I've never not enjoyed her, but my memory of her was that she was a little more harsh than she actually was. She was very involved throughout the entire game and did very well. And so then to see Amy coming across the way that she did, I mean, she was very in your face, brutally honest, to the point where it was almost uncomfortable with some of the things that she was saying to people. And I was surprised because that is not the Amy that I remember. Right. And again, we saw Amy again later. Yes. And I think we saw a different version of Amy later. And so I'm probably just mixing it all up in my mind. But it was an interesting thing to watch and revisit those memories with those two particular people. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Same. You know, I was reminded of things I had forgotten about Amy in this particular season, you know, that her hypocrisy, for example, getting mad at Eliza after she had tried to vote Eliza out.
I know. That was fascinating.
And then there was her holier than thou attitude about Twyla's big lie, which, you know, we'll certainly discuss more later.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like lying. How could you, you know, or that particular way to lie. Now, after Amy was booted, as I always did, I interviewed her and asked, why did you go along with the plan to vote out Eliza? And she said, well, I thought that I had too much input leading up to that. So you know, she wanted to sit back and let someone else do it. And it's like, really? Because that's a strange thing to say.
Yeah.
You know, that's almost like disavowing responsibility, you know? But then I have to say she did amuse me with her answer to my question of what she would do differently if she could, because she gave me a simple 3-word answer, vote off Chris.
Yeah, that's true. It's a good way to do it.
So, but speaking of, you know, I mentioned the Survivor Insider videos. Vanuatu gave us something in those videos that I don't remember from any other season. Now, that may just be I don't remember because I didn't remember that it had it this season until I went back and revisited it. But they had interviews with the cast on the red carpet on the way to the wrap party after the finale. And then they stuck those in the insider videos. And so that leads to an answer for a question that I know I was asking and probably other people were. Why did Bubba wear a Bob Barker T-shirt?
I love that T-shirt.
Yes. And he said it was because growing up, he and his grandfather watched The Price is Right. And Bob left him with a lot of memories from watching that show with his grandfather before he passed away. And now at the time, Survivor was the show that Bubba watched with his own boys.
Aww.
So it was like a tribute to his grandfather to then, you know, move it up to the next generation sort of thing.
That's so sweet. Yeah, that's really great.
So. There were a few other interesting tidbits from the red carpet that we'll get to in the rules. But I also wanted to share this very insightful remark from Mark Burnett, because certainly Mark Burnett has had a lot of intricate game wisdom, right? And so you just know whatever he said was, you know, going to be super smart. And he said the deciding moment in Vanuatu came when the Women's Alliance failed to hold together. Whoa, no way. Mind blown.
Blown.
What amazing insight from Mark Burnett. I'm so glad we got that interview on the red carpet.
That's great. Well, yeah. You know, it's not like he was wrong, so.
No. But, I mean, you know, average Joe on the street could have told you that one.
I know. But I do think that. We'll talk about that, obviously,
yeah, we'll
the downfall
yeah.
of the Women's Alliance.
Yes,
for sure.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And before we start getting to the rules, is there anything else about the season that you want to discuss?
Yes, I do. Actually, I loved the old school Survivor component, as I mentioned. But part of that I was really impressed with were the challenges. This was a time when I think the challenges were actually much more challenging. And I go back
to that balance beam. Whew.
Well, but that was only one part of it.
I know. I'm just kidding.
And it's more about the individual immunity challenges, because we just talked about Samoa. And I didn't mention this in the podcast when we were talking about Samoa. And I wish I had, but I'm going to mention it now, that I almost felt like the immunity challenges in Samoa were very like Wii Sport Resort kind of thing. Like it was like baseball, bowling. I think they did archery. I mean, it was literally Wii Sports. And then to watch this season and to see how insane some of these challenges were. I mean, these people were like, they were like dying, dragging themselves to try to get to the finish. They were exhausted. There was so much swimming involved. It was almost insane. The vertical maze that they had, incredible. And then the final immunity challenge. I for one, am a much bigger proponent of the challenges that just bring your true grit out. And like, who wants it the most? It's not a puzzle.
Like holding your arm over your head for
yes,
example.
Like for an hour and 42 minutes. Thank you. Yes. But those are the moments, because when you feel like your neck is on the line and you really need to fight, you find something within yourself that allows you to stay there longer and to hold whatever it is that much longer. And to me, I feel like that is a better challenge than who can do the best puzzle or the fastest puzzle after you run around and collect. To me, I feel like there's too many puzzles, not enough of those types of challenges. This season, I was loving the challenges because they were so damn hard. It was nice to watch.
Yeah, it's a good thing that Chris didn't have that balance beam thing later on in Jeff's career, mm-hmm. or else at the end of the challenge, he just said, okay, Chris, go walk across it. Come on, we're going to stay here till you walk across it.
I know, right? Like, this is a learning moment for you,
yeah.
Chris. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, before we get to the rules, I should mention that I have my usual information from articles and interviews I did, but I never got an interview from Twyla. I looked all over and I just don't have it. I don't remember exactly why. Mm. I'm guessing she wasn't really interested in rehashing everything with the media at that point.
Probably not.
So, you know, when I'm going through here and I don't say, and Twyla told me, it's not that I'm ignoring her. I just didn't have anything to work with.
That would have been a great interview.
Oh, yeah. I do have some information from her on the red carpet interviews that I mentioned, so that helps make up for it a little bit.
Right.
So moving on. Chris caused his tribe to lose the very first challenge because, as we mentioned, he couldn't make it over a balance beam. Very often that would spell the end of a player on Survivor. But Chris had bigger plans, and while he was physically unable to handle the beam, the rest of his game was very balanced. At the merge, it again looked like he should have been doomed, along with all his brethren. But he turned that around, too, and somehow came out the winner. How did he pull it off? Now that we've done a Vanuatu rewatch, and I've gone back over my older articles and interviews from its original airing, it's time to take a new look at why Chris won. The first and most important rule says to scheme and plot, and there is no doubt that Chris understood this. he told me that he'd watched Survivor since the very beginning, which, of course, you know, the very beginning back then was only 8 seasons. But still, right. You know, he watched it from the very beginning. And in doing so, he observed the different strategies that players used. As he said when casting his first vote, he started playing the game when they got to the beach. And that's a key aspect of this rule, to begin making alliances right away. Sure, it looked like he might be in trouble because he caused his tribe to lose the first immunity challenge. But as he told me, before the balance beam ever even happened, when we were walking on the beach to find our camp the first night, I made an alliance with Bubba. By noon the first day, Sarge had approached me about an older player alliance. I spoke with Chad, who had already aligned with Rory, and the alliance was complete by nightfall. I was safe 24 hours before the balance beam ever took place.
Mm-hmm.
And his understanding of the power of alliances and numbers would drive him the rest of the game.
Yes, and I do think that that's what allowed him to also be so calm in that moment, knowing that even though he screwed up balance beam, and as you said, that's the easiest reason to vote somebody off in that first 3 days, he wasn't worried about it because he had already made all of those inroads and he had already set himself up in such a great position before even walking into that challenge. And it wasn't even just about the alliance component, but it was just about how he was on the beach itself with the people that were surrounding him. He almost seemed to control conversations, but in a non-controlling way. It was very interesting to watch him interacting with people, talking to people, very complimentary, very just kind of building other people up. Chad in particular, being very supportive and how he was an inspiration to others for being there with, you know, only one leg. I mean, just really simple things, but enough to make someone go, that guy's just, he's a genuine guy. He's a really nice guy.
Mm-hmm.
Good to be around. And I think that all of that, in addition to building that strong alliance, but then also just building a rapport that people could enjoy, just set him up beautifully for then not, even though he fell off the balance beam multiple times, it not being an issue for anyone who was
couldn't
aligned
even
with
crawl
him.
Over it.
He couldn't. It was so bad. But I do love what he said at the immunity challenge because it was, you know, you have to outwit, outplay, outlast, not outbalance. I thought that was great.
Yes. Yeah. Now, in his original tribe, he led or co-led his alliance into voting out strong people versus physically or socially weaker people to keep that alliance together. In episode 3, Chris said while voting out John P, I may be weaker than you physically, but I'm stronger than you mentally.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a game. And then in episode 4, Bubba said Sarge was in charge of the alliance. But much like you said, I think Chris was leading without there being a recognition he was leading. He was the power behind the throne.
Yes.
And you could see this because Sarge kept wanting to vote out Rory, but the alliance would hold together. I think a lot of that was Chris.
Yes. And we actually saw him giving instruction at one point where it was, we can get to that person later. I don't remember exactly who he was talking about, but it was like, no, we can do that later. We don't need to do that now. He was very regimented in his thinking and always thinking kind of long term, which was great because that idea of let's knock out the younger group really was a shocking thing, I think, for anybody to be watching, especially way back when Survivor was new and fresh and all of a sudden all of the big, strong people are getting voted out and everyone was probably scratching their heads going, well, don't you need them to win challenges? Not in Chris's mind, it didn't matter. And it was it was an interesting strategy to watch and to see it unfold and actually work was just unexpected.
Yeah. Now, one thing which doesn't really play into it, and I don't know that it necessarily entered into his mind, but one thing that Rob discussed on the main countdown podcast was how the challenges were balanced, because you can't have a bunch of strength-based challenges when it's men against women. And I wonder if Chris was thinking about that, like, hey, these young studs, it's not going to matter as much because, you know, they've got to try to even it out so that, you know, there's a better playing field. I don't know that that played into it or not, or if he would have just done it anyway. He probably would have done it anyway.
Yeah, probably.
Getting back to the main point off that tangent, sorry. You know, in episode 4, in that tribal council was one of the situations where I said that, you know, Jeff Probst was criticizing them. And he said they started the individual game too soon. by doing that, voting out the younger guys. And, you know, we've seen him say that on other occasions. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, you're doing that. But Chris shot back and said, no, you have to do what's right for you long term.
Right.
Chris was right. Jeff was wrong.
Mm. Ooh.
Yeah. Now Jeff isn't going to like me either. But
I know. That's it. You're done.
Yeah.
If Jeff's that was me, listening, Jeff.
That was me, not exactly. Yeah, that was me, Jeff, not Jessica.
It wasn't me. I didn't say that. It was not me.
She would never say anything negative about you.
Never. I do think that it was interesting to see the idea that they weren't playing individually. I mean, really, if we stop and really look at it, they were playing as a team. It was just a team of people that I don't think Jeff necessarily was desirous of seeing going all the way to the end. If that's because, honestly, we all know that there is a liking of those strapping young men, you know, sitting in the final three. And that was being
all the ones that look like me, you mean?
Exactly. Yes, that's what I'm talking about. Yeah. So I do think that maybe there was some dislike that that's what was going to end up happening. And it wasn't going to play out the way that people had kind of envisioned the mm-hmm. season. But I will say, too, as far as the division and with the challenges, one thing that I had read was that this men versus women was not their choice. It was actually created because of Vanuatu and the culture. And so it wasn't even something that they wanted to do, but that's what they ended up doing because of where they were. So I don't know at what point that decision was made.
Yeah, that was brought up on the main podcast, and Rob basically poo-pooed the heck out of it. But it was brought up as if it happened literally on the spot when the chief divided them. You know, now maybe they knew it was going to happen going into it, and therefore they planned for it. But I mean, that was actually where Rob was talking about. Why would the challenges have been so balanced, mm-hmm. you know, if they hadn't known that?
Right.
But maybe they knew it far enough in advance, like you're saying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm curious about that.
Yeah. But as far as going back to what you said about, I do think that at least Chris was playing an individual game. He always knew the thing that so many survivors forget, which is only one person wins.
Oh, for sure.
Your tribe doesn't win. Your alliance doesn't win. You mm-hmm. win.
And that is true. And I'm not saying that he wasn't thinking of himself, mm-hmm. but he was thinking of himself in association with a group of people that he knew.
Who could protect them.
Him. Right. Yes. And so it was kind of this like fine balance where everyone's always kind of out for themselves. But if you are working within an alliance and that alliance is working for you and mm-hmm. you can see it making your game go further, then it's great for you to keep those people around. So it's not just an individual component. You also have to be protecting those other people because they are also protecting you. So it does kind of become this circular thing where, yeah, it's all about me, but it's also all about us because it has to be in order to be about me too.
Right, right. Now, as he moved along in the game, Chris figured out what people needed to hear and he told it to them.
Mm-hmm.
Go to episode 8. He talked about covering his bases by having final two deals with Sarge, Chad, and Julie. That's more than two right there. I will say at about this time frame, we also determined Chris was not perfect. He underestimated the strength of the Women's Alliance and admitted later that he put too much trust in Julie and Twyla not returning to it at the merge. He said in the episode 9 Tribal Council that Twyla and Julie played the game and deceived the men, and he probably would have done the same. And, you know, when he voted out Sarge, he then said he'd burn every one of the women if, you know, just let them open the door. And he got them to do just that. He got that opening. He even joined with the women in voting out Sarge. Now, it seemed like a silly thing to bother with. And that's something I often say, come on, this is silly. You know, it's pointless. You're not fooling anyone. Oh, I'm voting with the group. See, take me in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but in this case, that move, along with some other maneuvering, actually did help.
Yeah. Yeah. It was interesting, the story that he then told about Sarge advising him to vote him out. It was almost like he was trying to soften it a little bit that Sarge is my guy. Like, he was my number two. And I don't want you to think I'm going to turn my back on my number two. But Sarge told me to. And I knew that's where all the votes were going. So that's what I did. So I'm curious if that was also part of his thought process was, I want all of these women to think that if I have a solid alliance with them, that I'm going to be with them no matter what, unless they tell me otherwise. And if he's really thinking that deep into the game, then he is definitely like light years beyond where I think a lot of the people were who he was playing with, because mm-hmm. he was kind of building in these stories, if you could, so then he could tell people what they needed to hear in order for him to be sitting in that final tribal.
Yeah. Now, I hadn't thought of that. I actually was surprised he told that story, because I was like, you're undercutting yourself. You made the move to vote out Sarge mm-hmm. so that you could get in better with the women. And now you're undercutting yourself, saying Sarge told you to do it. But that's a very interesting point, that he probably did not want them to think, oh, if I make a final two deal with you, I'll turn on you.
Right.
Of course, none of them necessarily knew he had a final two deal with Sarge, because don't forget he had one with Julie, too.
Yes.
But, you know, I asked him how much of his survival at that point, when he was the last man standing, was due to his own play, how much was due to others, and how much was due to luck. And he said, with no ego whatsoever, he said it was completely due to his ability to play. Using Julie as his way into the Women's Alliance by playing the sympathy card. And with Julie campaigning for him, Leanne and Amy had a weak moment, which, you know, I discussed earlier with Amy, and decided to vote out Eliza, which flipped the whole situation.
Right. Well, they decided it was Leanne wasn't it Leanne that got voted out?
Yes, but it was because Amy and Leanne decided to turn on Eliza, which
now
then
I
they
see.
Could use against it. And
I have to try to keep it all straight in my head. Yeah, yes. And I do. But I also think that he was very good at reading the people that he was playing the game with, because to have a group of very strong women, he recognized early on that he can manipulate men. He can't manipulate women. Like, he was very clear about that in the beginning, and how happy he was that this was the division. And so he recognized that at the start of the game. And when all of a sudden he found himself surrounded by six women, he just kind of sat back and let them like eat each other.
Oh,
and
we'll then get to that.
We will. But I do think that was part of his strategy, where he was reading the situation very well, and he was adding that into his gameplay, which I was very impressed with his ability to do that, because I remember, like, I had forgotten, honestly, that he was one of seven and the other six were women. And I was watching it thinking to myself, how the hell does he pull this off? So, like, even though knowing he was the winner, was like, I am fascinated right now. And then to see all the little things that he did and put it all together was incredible.
Yeah. Yeah. It wasn't just allowing it to happen, but he played them against each other.
Yes.
You know, he ratted out Twyla and Scout to the other women about the plan. And he knew that this would turn them against each other and keep the focus off of himself.
Mm-hmm.
And then once he had that opening, he just never stopped working on it, chipping away at it.
Right.
He had separate final two deals with both Twyla and Eliza, in addition to the one we talked about already with Julie. He had a final three alliance with Scout. He just gave himself a number of different options. He took the one that best suited him.
Yeah.
And yeah, that meant stabbing Julie in the back. Yeah, that meant stabbing Eliza in the back. It was a game. He played it. And, you know, speaking of stabbing them in the back, there were a number of people at the time who had the opinion that Chris had screwed up his game by telling Scout and Twyla one thing and Julie and Eliza another, directly lying to the younger women.
Mm-hmm.
Some viewers and commentators, including those on my website, thought he should have been vaguer. Like, don't just flat out lie. Be vaguer about it. And I asked Chris, and he said, my intentions were to keep everybody happy. And with the situation I had myself in, anything was still possible. If mm-hmm. I come clean to Julie with my intentions, she has time to persuade Twyla I'm no good. She had already done it once. Julie was a player. She flat out lied to Chad about her loyalty to LePevy. Straight out lied.
Mm-hmm.
he said, you're damn straight. As I look back, that should have been an easy decision.
Yeah. Well, and also, too, to his credit, when he was doing all of these things with creating all of these final two here, final two there, he was also creating a friendship. at the same time, which became part of his strategy, because when you have so many people feel like they are committed to you, there's less of a chance that they're going to go throw you under the bus, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so he could probably feel a little more secure in the fact that he was straight out lying to this one about that one and doing the flip to the other one, because he didn't have to worry about them talking to each other because they all hated each other. So
right. It's back to the Brian Heidick strategy, mm-hmm. you know, that I'm going to tell different things to different people and just know that they're not going to talk.
Yeah.
Or at least hope that they're not going to talk.
Yeah.
You know, which we saw, we've seen it work. We've seen it not work a number of times, but we've also seen it work, you know. So we saw it in Ghost Island work with the, mm-hmm. with the duo of Wendell and Dominic. So,
you have to be really, really a great people person, though, I think, to pull it off.
Yeah. Sure. And somehow by the time we get to episode 13, Chris had become the most trusted person out there.
Yes.
He even said that. He said, I don't trust any of the women. The women don't trust each other, but all of them trust me.
Mm-hmm.
And I asked Eliza, why did you feel that way about him? And she said she felt like she had no other options. Amy and Julie had already voted against her. There was no way Scout or Twyla would make a final two deal with her.
Mm-hmm.
So Chris was it.
Yeah.
Quote, after he had confided in me, Jules and Leanne about Scout and Twyla trying to plot with him and Chad to vote me off, I felt like he was on my side. And then he reconfirmed that when he was telling the truth about Leanne, Amy, and Julie planning to vote against me at Final Seven to get me out of the game. So then as a follow-up, I asked Eliza why she continued to trust Chris even after he lied to Julie and voted her out. Which again, that's another thing we've seen again with Brian. It's like, oh, good buddy, stab you in the back. It's like, why do you continue? And she said, Chris is a good BSer. He told me that Julie was going to turn on us and he had voted her out for us, for our final two pact.
Mm-hmm.
He said she was a player and she was not going to stick with us. So again, we see how Chris put himself in the position of being the one to provide the information or the misinformation mm-hmm. to get himself further in the game.
Yeah, he was very good at manipulating people to sway them in a direction that would be hugely beneficial to himself.
Yeah. All right. Well, we said a lot about Chris. We should say a little bit about Twyla. She said she came to Survivor for one reason and one reason only, to win $1 million. So you'd better believe she was prepared to make alliances, break alliances, do whatever it took. We saw this on numerous occasions. Early on, Twyla was a member of the Older Woman Alliance, but she also had a good relationship with Dolly that helped force Dolly into the indecisiveness that led to her dismissal. After the tribal swap, Twyla must have felt as doomed as Bubba and Rory did on Yasser, but she made a new alliance, a Final Four alliance,
mm-hmm.
and found herself in a good position. But then when she believed that Julie had been offered a Final Four deal as well, which, of course, was a lie, but she didn't know that at the time,
mm-hmm.
Twyla didn't just sit back to wait and see what would happen. She took action. She rejoined with her original alliance at the merge. Once again, she was in the majority. And still again, when she saw her position slipping within that alliance, she refused to just lie down and let Amy, Leanne, and Julie walk all over her. So she turned the game around again because she was the one who realized that Chris was in the key position to bring Eliza to their side. And so in short, Twyla knew that she would have to make and break alliances, like I said, make and break promises. And she did not hesitate to do it when necessary. She said on the wrap party red carpet that the moment that changed the game for her was when the decision was made to take out Eliza instead of Chris. And when she saw that happening, she could have settled for third or fourth, but she decided to make her move right then and there.
Yes, and I have to give her a lot of props for having that type of mentality in this game. I don't think enough people go into Survivor saying, I'm not here for third place. I'm not here for fourth place. I'm here to win. And so I'm going to do anything I need to do to win. And sometimes it backfires on you like we saw, and we'll get to with her final tribal. And she upset some people, but she did everything that she thought she needed to do to put mm-hmm. herself in a winning position. And I do really respect her ability to be so strong and so independent at the same time, even though she was kind of doing what Chris was doing, where she was playing an individual game, but she wasn't as good at formulating that group of people around her that she needed for the protection. His was a much larger group, and hers dwindled very quickly. And so I think her individual game was much more apparent than Chris's individual game. And that's, I think, why she didn't balance it all out well enough. Unfortunately, she upset people in the process of doing that.
Yeah. Now, before we close out this rule, I want to go back to Chris about one more thing. Normally, I say you can't rely on winning challenges as part of your quote unquote strategy. And I've criticized players who said that in just the most recent couple of podcasts we've done. Some of my fellow Reality News Online writers similarly criticized Chris for putting himself in a position where he needed to win the last two. Because, you know, Scout was going to bring Twyla, Twyla was going to bring Scout, but he chose to go with that group. In this very particular case, I actually think it was a good strategy. He put himself up against Scout and Twyla. That's the closest thing to a guaranteed challenge win right there.
Yeah.
You know, if he had kept Eliza, he wouldn't have been up against a tight pair, but Eliza had won challenges.
Mm-hmm.
And you'd better believe she would have booted him at final three. So, yeah, he had to go to the end with a tight pair because he knew he could beat them.
Yeah.
You know, Scout could barely walk by the time Survivor
was her poor knee.
Yeah. And then it turned out, wasn't it at the reunion that she mentioned that she had the wrong size knee implant?
Mm-hmm. And now she's got, now she has implants, I think, in both of her knees and her shoulders. So she is, she's like a robot at this point.
Yeah, I know. Christian Hubicki is going to start taking over for her. But yeah, so like I said, in most cases, saying I'm just going to win all the challenges is not a good strategy. But when you can put yourself up against the people who you're almost certain to win against, that is a good strategy.
And you're also not only certain to win against them in the challenges, but you're also looking at them as the game that they played in addition to.
Oh, right.
So I can beat these people in a challenge. And even if they're sitting next to me, my chances of beating that person are better than that person there.
Mm-hmm.
So on the whole, I think his decision was completely sound.
Oh, yeah. All right. We can move into the second rule, which says not to scheme and plot too much and to keep your scheming secret. Just as Chris knew how to scheme and plot, he also knew when to put a lid on it. Because sometimes the most important thing you can do is shut up. And he knew how to do that. You already started to talk about that. In episode 11, he said he didn't even have to do anything. The others just changed the vote for him. Then the next episode, he just sat back and enjoyed the women fighting after tribal council. He said in his red carpet interview that his turnaround in the game came by knowing to sit back, keep his mouth shut, and let the women tear themselves apart.
Yes. And I think that this is such a great point to bring up. In circumstances like this on Survivor, not enough people understand to do this, that if you have infighting, let them fight. Mm-hmm. You don't need to pepper anything. You don't need to get involved, especially with the position that he was in. He knew that he was on the outs. He knew that he was the last man, and the likelihood of him sticking around was almost slim to none. But then to see that crack and just let it be, I think was great, because it, I think, showed the women he wasn't picking sides. You know, he wasn't trying to sway anyone a particular way. He wasn't trying to convince anyone that they should act differently or that they should say different things. He just let them. He really did let them just eat each other apart. And it was kind of fun to watch, because he had the best seat for all of it.
Yeah.
But he didn't feed into it. He didn't act like he was supporting anyone. He kept himself completely out of it. And I think that benefited his ability to then form so many relationships with each of those women, because he was never picking a side.
Yeah. Yeah, he just needed popcorn to sit there.
Mm-hmm.
Sit back and eat the popcorn, watch them do it. Yeah. I don't think that meme had been invented yet.
Probably not.
I don't think any memes had been invented yet.
No, probably not.
But yeah, so, you know, he did a great job. Now for Twyla, we, of course, saw the infamous swearing on her son's name when she laughed and told us, maybe if I win $1 million, God will forgive me. She didn't see a problem with it. And quite frankly, neither do I.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing is, it wasn't about me or her. It was about what the others thought. And swearing on her son was going too far in their eyes. I think that's a stupid position to have. And one lie is no different from another. But she needed to know her allies and her enemies. She at least knew them well enough to understand that if she said that, they'd believe her. And they did. But she didn't realize how upset they would be when she then broke that word.
Yes. And I think that this is a huge difference that we see for Twyla versus other people who have said very similar things, like Tony. Tony swore on his entire family, his wife, his kids, everybody. And the way that he played the game, it didn't offend people that he said those things and that he lied about those things, because it kind of fit in line with how Tony played Survivor. Whereas someone like Twyla, the way that she carried herself, the way that she presented herself as a very loyal, trusting individual who was, you know, just going to fight hard and work hard. And so when you say something like that, when you are presenting yourself in a particular way, it does mean something potentially to the person on the receiving end. And we've said this multiple times, that perception is reality. And if people see that about you, and if that's what people think, they will be more offended. And unfortunately, in this game, the last thing you want to do is offend people, because I do feel like has such an impact on the decision making of anyone when they're sitting in that jury box to determine whether or not you should win $1 million. Mm-hmm. Is were they offended by what you did, as opposed to how your game actually was? And I think Twyla suffered that greatly, because she did offend so many people by doing what she did.
Yeah. Yeah. And the other problem she had with this rule was that she was an obvious duo with Scout.
Mm-hmm.
The two of them were so tight that Twyla's options were limited in terms of alternate plans. And more importantly for this rule, Julie and Eliza knew they were not going to approach Twyla to turn on Scout or vice versa, because they knew it wouldn't happen. You know, many people, as I mentioned, thought that Chris should have gone with Julie and Eliza for exactly this reason, because Scout and Twyla were unbreakable. But, you know, as I mentioned, he knew he could win those challenges.
Right.
Now, we can't leave the second rule without talking about somebody who was booted much, much earlier in the season. As a matter of fact, I didn't realize how early she was booted until it happened. Well, until I rewatched it. And that's Dolly. I have to bring her up because she earned herself a permanent place, a permanent mention in the rules. In the second rule, I discuss how Christy from the Amazon was approached by two opposing alliances, including, of course, Rob Cesternino, and refused to make a promise to either one. So the two sides realized they were both vulnerable and joined up to get rid of her instead.
Mm-hmm.
Dolly duplicated this same mistake.
Right.
You know, she refused to say which alliance she was going with, caused, you know, some people like Eliza to switch sides, join together, even though Eliza and, you know, the older women did not get along at all.
Mm-hmm.
Eliza thought she was potentially going.
Right.
And instead, hello, Dolly. Goodbye,
Dolly. Goodbye, Dolly. And we've talked about that a lot, where the unknown factor is what's more dangerous than the known. Mm-hmm. So if you have someone who's waffling, that's very scary. That's definitely very scary. And it is exactly what we saw Dolly do. And so, unfortunately, you know, this is something that you've mentioned repeatedly. You always say yes. If someone comes to you and says, hey, what about this? Absolutely, let's do that. And unfortunately, Dolly was very clear that she had not made up her mind and had not made a decision.
Yeah.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. actually a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
All right. The third rule talks about being flexible. Now, how do you think Chris did here?
Oh, my gosh. He should get a crown that says flexibility. He really,
that'll be our next merch thing. A crown that says flexibility.
That might be dangerous, but yeah, so I do think that everything that Chris needed to do in order to further his game, he figured out how to do it and he made it work. And this is a guy who, as I mentioned already, when I saw the position he was in, I'm like, how the hell does he pull this off? And it's because he was willing to be flexible and he was willing to look at every potential avenue and that person, could I use them to get further in the game? This person over here, can I use them to get further in the game? And really had his like, I hate to, the hand on the pulse kind of thing, but he really did. Mm-hmm. And he used that in order to determine which was the best route to take. And so he was incredibly flexible throughout the entire game, so much so that when he was getting down to the very end, people still weren't sure what his choice was going to be. Right. So I really do think that he definitely was incredibly flexible, and it was to his benefit throughout the entire game.
Yeah. And feel free to use the finger on the pulse thing whenever you want, because that's actually specifically said in the rule. So but yeah, as we discussed in the first rule, he had multiple final two and final three deals. Each person who had a deal with Chris was certain that Chris was going to be true to them.
Right.
And, it gave him all these different options. It meant even if he hadn't won the last two immunities, he might have been able to stick around anyway. Mm-hmm. We'll never know for sure. I doubt it, but some people thought that.
Right. Yeah, if there had been a Scout and Twyla in the final two, it would have been interesting to see.
Yeah. I don't know who would have won that.
I know.
Didn't do one of his things of, well, if these two had been in there,
who
would
have
won?
I know, he didn't. He avoided that. He was distracted by Julie.
Yeah. Now, Twyla, speaking of her, showed that she could follow this rule, too, when she realized that, if Scout could be replaced in the Women's Final Four Alliance, Twyla herself could soon follow. And mm-hmm. she found a different way to the end by pulling in the last man standing and the young woman she didn't really like. But then again, later she limited her flexibility because of that open alliance with Scout that I had mentioned, making it clear there was no way she would continue to align herself with Eliza or Julie once the threat of Leanne and Amy had passed.
Right. Yeah. And I do think that Twyla was partly to blame for the obviousness between she and Scout, but Scout was also to blame too. And Twyla actually mentioned that when Scout was on the mat and was all excited to see Twyla, that she was still there. And so she got thrown out really early that this was going to be a very solid mm-hmm. two. But Twyla didn't do anything to help, eliminate that or ensure people that wasn't a concern. And so I do think that, she ended up kind of locking herself into that relationship with Scout instead of trying to undo what had been done.
Right. All right. Before we move on, I again want to mention one other person in this rule. When I interviewed Eliza, I asked her about her planned strategy coming into the game. And she said, the one strategic thing I planned to do that I stuck with was to be flexible. I knew that if I wanted to stay in the game, I was going to have to adapt. And that's what I did. And she did, even when it meant aligning herself with people she didn't like at all. So maybe she'll get that crown.
She should get that crown. Yeah. So. I mean, she was, even just watching episode one, I was like, how does Eliza survive? Because so many people were gunning for her very early on mm-hmm. at the game. And she really did switch things up and moved where she needed to go and figured out, much like Chris, what was going to work best for her game and got her all the way almost to the end.
Yeah. All right, we move to the fourth rule, which tells players not to let their emotions control them. And once again, Chris did a great job following this rule. We saw Chris become friends with several of the women, like Julie and Eliza. But he put that aside and did what he needed to do. As he voted out Julie, he said, "It's tough, but I got to play the game." Mm-hmm. When he was on the red carpet, he said he entertained the thought of changing his plan and sticking with Julie and Eliza. But that's when you take your heart out of it and you stick with your plan.
Yes.
Before he even got to that place with Julie, he first had to control a different anger or a different emotion with her, which is anger. Again, in his red carpet interview, he said a key turning point in his game came when Julie and Twyla jumped back to Yasser and voted off Rory. Julie came to him the next day and asked if he hated her for jumping. And he said no, he was disappointed, but they'd always be friends. By not allowing his anger to show, he kept her close. And as we discussed, Julie was an integral part of his success.
Yes. And I think that this is something that we've seen not that often, but where someone is able to control other people because of the other person's emotions. Mm-hmm. And he was very good at recognizing where people were at emotionally and then kind of feeding on that. And I think we saw that with Julie. We saw how important the friendship was with Julie, and he really, really honed in on that. And I think he did that with every person in a different way, which is why he had friendships with all of them. And that's why everybody thought that he was solid with them, because he was playing their emotions against them. And they didn't even realize that he was. Scout called him out on it at the end.
Oh,
but,
yeah.
But, you know, but I do think that it was something that he definitely was understanding of. And I think rightfully so, he was recognizing that there was a lot of infighting amongst the women. And that certainly helped him understand where he needed to be. You know, I'm just going to sit back and let myself not be involved in the fighting, which benefited him too. So he was completely taking advantage of the situation, or, you know, rightfully so. I mean, he should have, because mm-hmm. it worked for him.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, moving to Twyla again, at first glance, we might think that she was different in this rule because she always showed her emotions. But that doesn't mean that she let them control her, at least not usually. She did let her anger get the better of her at times, but she usually voted with the proper strategy no matter how she felt. A good example was when she believed, thanks to the lie from Julie, that the men on Lopevi had promised Final Four to both women. Despite her respect and admiration for Sarge, she thought her best strategic move was to get back together with the women. Another good example is that although she had not gotten along with Eliza, to say the least, when the time came to overthrow the dominant alliance, Twyla was willing to align with her and keep that alliance solid until it was time to go to Final Three.
Yeah, and I think that it's really interesting to see that so many people were willing to do that, because Eliza was doing the same thing. Twyla was doing the same thing. Mm-hmm. They were able to set their emotions aside and say, okay, well, this is about the vote. It's not about how I feel towards you at this moment in time. Obviously, when you start to get down there on the numbers, then it really does affect people's voting, because if they don't like you, the likelihood of going to the final two of them, you might not make it. But I do have to credit her a lot for having an ability to work with people that she had such a contentious relationship, but she did it recognizing it was necessary. And she did set aside her respect for Sarge, which we saw was a very hard thing for her to do,
right?
Because she really liked Sarge and she wanted to have a friendship with him, but she was recognizing where she was in the game, even though she had been lied to.
Yeah. Now, you know, you say we saw a lot of this from different people. I would like to put an addendum on that. We saw a lot of this from the people who made it to the end.
Yes, that is true.
You know, and that's mm-hmm. that's why it's important you follow these rules, you know, because the ones who didn't make it to the end did not follow this one.
Right.
Ones who did follow this one.
Mm-hmm, for sure.
So the fifth rule talks about the social game and reminds players they need to pretend to be nice. Let's start off with Twyla for this one, because this is clearly a rule she should have brushed on just a teensy bit before heading out to play. But Twyla had to be Twyla. As a viewer, I loved it that Twyla said what was on her mind. As a strategist, I have to say it really hurt her.
Right.
Both Chris and Twyla lied. But Chris And you alluded to this earlier. Chris buttered people up and acted nice both before and after the lies.
Mm-hmm.
Violet just said whatever she was thinking, no matter who it pissed off.
Right.
And over the course of the season, she had blowups that we saw with Mia, Amy, Eliza. Now, those were just the screaming matches.
Mm-hmm.
She alienated several others. And, you know, each time she came out ahead in the vote, but there was always the final jury looming.
Yeah.
And some of the arguments were just over stupid things, like when she blew the hell up about bananas.
I know.
With Eliza at the beginning of episode 13.
Why? So yeah. Unnecessary.
Yeah.
And I feel for Twyla because I think this is a very hard thing to do when you go on Survivor is to check yourself. And this is who Twyla is through and through. She doesn't want to mince words. She doesn't think that she should because she's going to be honest. And the one time that she wasn't, at least the one time that was very clear to all of mm-hmm. us, she was raked through the coals for it when she lied about her son. And so this goes back to that. If you're going to be so open and honest to everyone about everything, they're going to assume that when you say something like, I swear on my son, that you're being honest about that too. And so it becomes a very tricky game to play if they don't expect you to be lying because, my God, she's been so open and there's no question about where Twyla is on this particular issue or this particular situation. So it definitely worked against her, not just for being, not just for running the potential of maybe hurting someone's feelings, but also people making determinations about who she was as a person with how she presented herself, and it ended up biting her.
Yeah, yeah. Now, Eliza said in a Survivor Insider video that Twyla was upfront about the fact that she was a deceptive, lying bitch. She never treated Eliza with an ounce of respect. She was condescending. She didn't treat her like a human being. With Twyla, it was bitterness through the entire game. And Twyla herself admitted in her red carpet interview that watching the season back, some of the things she said were just vicious, like what she said toward Eliza. Mm-hmm. Some of it wasn't necessary. Twyla even said in the finale that, you know, the more she pisses people off, the more she can lose in the final two. But she did it anyway.
And she did it sitting in the finale when she had an opportunity to fix it because she's Twyla and she wants to be honest and wants to tell you how she feels. That's not the time to do it because you have someone who is deciding who's going to get $1 million. And that's not the time to dig in your heels on that particular type of issue.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, Chris, on the other hand, fully understood how to pretend to be nice. He knew if he went on the warpath, the women would close ranks. But if he was as sweet as can be, he figured he might just get one or more of them on his side. As he said in episode 10, you question a woman, she'll wring your neck. You show vulnerability, she'll start thinking with her heart, and there's a back door. And he did exactly that. Yeah. And it was even more than that. He understood it wasn't even necessarily enough for him to just be nice. He needed someone else to be nasty.
Yes.
Several times we saw him encouraging Twyla to air her feelings, say what she thought. He even got her to lash out at Eliza, like you mentioned, during the jury questions. Before she figured out what Chris's little plan was, it was an excellent job on his part.
Yes. And this goes back to what I mentioned previously, where he knows how to play other people's mm-hmm. emotions. And he did that with Twyla beautifully. And he did it with Eliza when he was having that conversation with her when he was on the hammock. And it was interesting to see how he removed himself so quickly from that particular conversation, because he's literally talking to Eliza. And he's like, I'm just hearing her out. I'm just listening. I'm just mm-hmm. laying here listening. And acted as if he didn't do anything wrong, even though he had been talking to Eliza about Twyla. And Eliza's the only one that really got the war path of Twyla in that moment.
Right.
Instead of Chris. And so I do think that it was an interesting dynamic to watch, because he was so good at maintaining his composure. And Twyla was so bad at maintaining her composure.
No. Yeah. Yeah. All right. We can go to the sixth rule, which warns against being too much of a threat. And both of our finalists followed this one, though for Violet was likely unintentional. After all, she was clearly not too much of a threat, because that's the exact reason Chris wanted to take her to Final Two. She was the ideal person for Chris to face on a heavily majority Women's Alliance jury.
For sure. Yeah. If you just look at who was going to be sitting there,
mm-hmm.
and you just start doing the calculations for who potentially is going to vote for who, she had offended so many of those individuals sitting there that mm-hmm. the likelihood of him garnering a vote just because of that was very high.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, for Chris, partially by design and partially by happenstance, he appeared to be the least threatening of the remaining guys after the merge. Rory, Sarge, and Chad all seemed more likely to win challenges, especially if they involved a balance beam. So they were the first three to go. As we've discussed, Chris also had one or two women arguing for him to stick around. But that wouldn't have been possible if he had been seen as a huge challenge threat. He ended up turning it on when he needed to, mm-hmm. and when it couldn't come back to haunt him, and when he was against people that were easier to beat.
Right.
You know, so... Yeah, like I said, not exactly up against the cream of the crop at that point.
Yeah, and I do think that it's interesting how he really integrated himself into the Women's Alliance, so much so that he was no longer seen as a threat just because he was the guy.
Right.
And that, you know, that's a very, I think, interesting, nuanced point in all of this, because women were just coming in with, Man, gotta go. Because we are going to carry this to the end. Like, we're going to do this. And he somehow managed to kind of remove that label from himself and take that threat away from him just because he was a man. It no longer mattered to the women because he became their friend.
Right. All right. The seventh rule deal covers dealing with idols and advantages. And this season was way too soon to worry about any of that. Except for the Holy Rock, which did the men absolutely no good whatsoever. So we can, you know, skip right on past that.
Yeah. And I'm happy that we can, because this is old school Survivor.
Yes. Yes. Like, obviously, this rule was not part of the rules at mm-hmm. the time. Instead right. of this rule, we had the rule that had, you know, fell out of them, which was, you know, work hard around camp. Don't be seen as lazy.
Right.
And that wouldn't have affected either of them either. So.
Right.
Now, Appendix A is about the rest of the tribe keeping their end goals in mind when voting, and says, of course, to vote out the weak, then the strong, then the weak, then the strong. At the beginning, it did seem like Chris voted out the strong first.
Mm-hmm.
But as we've discussed, he was focused on the strength of his alliance, not yes. the tribal strength for challenges. And those young guys were weak links in that regard. As the game progressed, he mostly followed this path. For example, voting out the stronger Julie and Eliza at the end so he could face the weaker opponents. But most importantly, he kept his end goal in mind throughout. Like he told Jeff, and we mentioned earlier, you have to think long term.
Yes. And I am curious if part of his long term strategy did include the fact that the younger men had been discussing the women right from the start, that they were discussing the younger women on the other tribe as well. And I'm wondering if part of his strategy was to remove the possibility that there could be some bonding happening at the merge between the younger
men.
Is
that what you call it? Bonding?
Well, you know, cuddling up at night, being warm, creating an alliance. There's all kinds of things. But I do think that when you start to show your cards early on in the game, that there is a possibility that, oh, well, I was, what was it, Amber? I know there was like an Amber type that one of the men was talking about early on, that so that can get your wheel spinning, especially if you are Chris and you're really thinking long term.
Right.
You could be looking at that as, well, that could be a potential duo come yep. the merge. I need to nip that in the bud before it even becomes a thing.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering if that was part of it for him as well.
Yeah, probably. All right. We move to Appendix B, which covers the jury phase and final tribal council. I think Chris did an amazing job with the jury
mm-hmm.
and also helped cause Twyla to do a terrible job.
Yes.
But even though it was mentioned by Rob or whoever on the main podcast that he may have changed some minds with his jury speech, I don't know that it mattered, because he had already in the jury phase set things up so well. You mm-hmm. mentioned this already. I knew coming in that Sarge and Chad would obviously vote for Chris.
Right.
Okay. They were locked in. Scout, similarly locked in for Twyla. Fine. I figured Eliza and Julie would almost certainly vote for Chris. And that would lock it up for him right there, because you didn't have 13-person juries or something.
Right. Mm-hmm.
You know, and that was because he positioned himself for the outcome by following parts of this rule earlier. We've already discussed why going with Twyla and Scout was the right move, but let me add to it from what he told me in our interview. He said Twyla and Scout was the only way to go. The most controversial player and the physically weakest. Eliza was extremely strong physically and mentally. Julie was too well liked by the other women in her alliance, who were, by the way, were on the jury. Basically, Twyla was a sure thing.
Yeah.
But he says she was a sure thing, and it turned out he was right. You can never be certain.
Mm-hmm.
So Chris made sure to prepare for the jury, and he was able, again, to read people and figure out what they wanted him to say. Eliza wanted an apology. Fine, here's your apology.
Right.
Sarge wanted reassurance that they were still friends. The only right answer was to say that, of course, they would be friends, even if Sarge voted against him. Julie wanted to know how long he had been playing her. Oh, he had never been playing her. It was just the way things ended up. He still loved her like a little sister.
Mm-hmm.
It was like watching an orchestra, a master musician, play exactly the right notes.
Mm-hmm.
And Chris told me, I knew what I had to say to give myself the best shot of winning. Emotions do factor into the game.
Yes.
And
yes.
Yeah. And like you said earlier, only Scout called Chris out on his BS. And when she did, he basically admitted it.
He did.
He was like, I'm not going to bother arguing, because how many times does arguing draw more attention to something where he just agrees with it? OK, it's done.
Yeah.
And so he agreed. He put it behind him and nobody else really seemed to notice.
No, it was masterful. Watching him in that final tribal council really was masterful, because even though he was neck deep in the shit that he was spewing to people, it sounded so genuine, and it really came across like, I mean every word. Like, I'm emotional. I'm getting upset. Like, I am sad because I hurt your feelings. And then Scout gets up there and, oh, you are neck deep in the BS. And he acknowledges that he is. And they still, I think they're just so lost in the fact that, like, oh, he said exactly what I needed him to say, that they weren't even paying attention at that point. It was an incredible thing to see. And that, I think, is something that we don't get to see very often, is someone just kind of blow it out of the park when they're sitting there in their final tribal council. He definitely planned each person, kind of knowing, I think, what they were going to be focused on. So he knew how to respond. And he did the same thing that he had been doing the entire time he was on the island, playing their emotions against them and recognizing that, yes, people do vote emotionally. And the fact that Amy voted for Twyla was amazing, because there is someone who did not like Twyla, was very obviously against Twyla, but took the game into consideration and said, she got it. She got one over on me. Mm-hmm. So that's why I'm going to vote for Twyla. Which is interesting, because I don't think anybody else sitting in that jury did the same thing. I think everyone else was, it was an emotionally based vote as opposed to the actual game. And so I, not that I'm thinking that Twyla outdid Chris and how she played the game, but I think that just watching him manipulate people the way that he did in that final tribal was masterful.
Yeah. Yeah. Appendix B specifically says, if the jury is looking for apologies, then in general, they are good. Say you're sorry to those you ran over to get there. While you're at it, flatter them. It never hurts. Point out that it was nothing personal, but you only acted that way for the game, etc. If you go this route, you need to make those apologies specific, not just a general sorry to the whole jury. Now, that was essentially the same language in the original What Vanuatu Survivors Should Have Learned. So in the rules at the time. So it's not like I later watched him and based that language on him. No, it was there, but it was like Chris was directly reading it from it. He apologized. He said it was just the game. When Amy asked what qualities he had that she didn't, he flattered her. Mm-hmm. It was one of the best jury performances, if not the best, that we'd seen to that point. And it still ranks damn near the top.
Yeah, I totally forgot how phenomenal he was in this. And I was watching it thinking to myself, why did they not bring him back for Winners at War? Because he was so, so fantastic in that final tribal council. It was scary.
Yeah. Now, Chris also sent Twyla in the wrong direction by telling her he wouldn't be taking any crap from the jury. He told us he wanted them to remember why they didn't like her. And boy, did they. Twyla told Eliza, "I think you're a spoiled child. If you don't need to apologize to me, I don't to you." Now, she eventually came around and apologized for swearing on her son's name. To me, the one thing she didn't need to apologize about, but of course, certain jurors thought she needed to. So it was the right thing to do. But, and then she had this very emotional closing, saying, "I didn't come in intentionally to deceive or lie. My word is good in real life. All I thought about was bettering my life, and I didn't care about you. It turned me into somebody I don't like. I apologize to each and every one of you. It wasn't the game I intended to play. It was the game that played me.
Yeah.
If you forgive me, maybe I can forgive myself." Now, the problem was it was too little, too late, and she also did what I said not to do. She gave a generic apology to the whole jury rather than to specific people as they were talking to her.
And Chris was individually pointing people out while he was speaking, and it was so heartfelt and very, very individualized for each person. And then Twyla just did the group apology.
Yeah.
And the other thing, too, that I think is an interesting thing to note here is you have to own the game that you play, right? Mm-hmm. And Twyla ended up apologizing for everything she did, saying, "I should have never done anything."
Yeah, and the game played me. It wasn't what I did. Yeah.
Right, and I think that that is the worst route that someone can take in the final tribal, because then you're not owning what you did. You have to be able to sit there and say, "This is what I did, and this is why I did it."
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's tugging on heartstrings, or it was strategic, or you're so much better than me, and that's why I had to vote you out because you were going to beat me. You have to find a reason as to why you did what you did. You can't just say, "I shouldn't have done it because the game got to me and the game played me." Because at that point, you haven't outplayed anyone then. You've been outplayed by the game. And so you're actually telling the jury, "Yeah, don't vote for me because I shouldn't be sitting here because I didn't do what I should have done. And I didn't actually play this game."
Yeah. Yeah. Now, in the end, did the speeches matter? I don't know. Like I said, he had four almost locked in votes. But Julie told me in regards to Chris, another pile of BS wasn't going to change the fact that he played me and played the best game. So, yes, I was going to give it to him, even though I might have thought I would make up my mind at final trial. So she was basically kidding herself that she would, but she knew. Eliza told me I was pretty angry at Chris for going back on his word to me. So if Twyla had given me a sincere apology for the way she treated me over the course of the time we were out there, and Chris had told me to shove it and not apologize, then I think I would have voted for Twyla. However, Chris apologized and Twyla didn't, and that cemented my vote. So it would have taken that very unlikely series of events for Eliza to change her vote.
Right. And I mean, and who knows? Sarge could have been up in the air because maybe Sarge was offended by the fact that he got voted out by his buddy. But Sarge cleared that up when he actually voted.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, maybe when I was rewatching it, I remembered that, or maybe I was just like, "Oh, he's so full of it." But when he got in there and he's like, "I might not vote for you. I'm leaning." Oh, baloney.
Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm. You got to put on a show, right?
Right. Right. All right. Well, it is about time to wrap things up. So what are your final thoughts?
My final thoughts on Chris is he really is the epitome of outwit, outplay, and outlast. You just look at all of the components of his game, and the fact that he managed to get to the end and everyone is kind of scratching their head as to how did he do it really makes you have to look at his game in its entirety. Because as we've discussed, he was someone who within the first challenge blew it. And in the world of Survivor, we all know that they're looking for a reason to vote somebody off first.
Yep.
And usually it's a challenge issue. And if somebody blows the challenge and you're the reason why we're at tribal council, it makes everybody feel better because it's not personal. It's about challenge performance, and we need to win challenges so we don't come back to tribal council. He didn't even need to worry about that because he had already cemented himself in a group of five and knew where he stood and took control of the game from day one. And he truly did outwit, outplay, outlast, to the point that when he was the last man standing, he didn't even need to worry about it because he was so good at manipulating people, utilizing people's emotions, and making people see things from his perspective without even them realizing it. It really was a masterful act, and I'm so glad that we got to do this rewatch because I do think that he's very underappreciated as a winner for whatever reason. But his playing the game started from day one, and it carried all the way through to day 39. He never stopped once. He was always thinking long term, and he really was playing out all of the potential avenues to get to that final two. He knew how to get there, and he set his course and made it happen. And he cannot give credit for his win to anybody but himself. He picked the right people to sit next to. He picked the right people to align himself with, and he did it right from the start of the game. So kudos to him for figuring out what I think so many people can never figure out is how do you do all three of those components? And it would have been interesting to see the new tribal council questions posed to him when they actually focus on each of those outwit, outplay, outlast, because he really did blow all of them out of the water.
Yeah. Yeah, I was having a discussion on Twitter about the season, and the topic of the young, strong guys being voted out first was brought up. To my mind, that was part of what made the season great, because it emphasized that you don't have to be young, good-looking, or strong. You need to make alliances, you need to have the numbers, you need to use your head. And that's what Chris did. In order to win, Chris had to lie, use emotions, make other people think with their hearts. But all along, he was using his head. He planned out his strategy to stack the odds in his favor. He picked the best possible opponent for Final Two. Meanwhile, he remained flexible enough to change his mind if circumstances would have warranted it. Usually the people who use cold strategy in the way he did end up with the brunt of the criticism at the final jury. But Chris brought along Twyla, who had pissed off so many people that they didn't seem to care too much that Chris had been lying also. Individual women kept trusting Chris, and then Chris would vote them out. In this way, he wasn't dissimilar to Russell. But the main difference is that Chris wasn't a dick about it. And he had a more Russell-like person against him instead, obviously way before Russell. After Scout, Twyla, Eliza, and Chris turned the game around, Twyla told Amy and Julie, "We got the power." In that tribal council, she said, "She lied, but so have others. Get over it. Screw you." While she was right about those things in the moment, she forgot the jury has the ultimate power at the end.
Mm-hmm.
Before final tribal council, Twyla said, "I deserve to win because I played the best. I didn't suck up to anyone or pretend to be someone I wasn't." That was the cherry on top of her not understanding that part of the game. If you didn't suck up or pretend to be someone you're not, you weren't playing the best, especially in this season. At the reunion, Twyla said she mostly told the truth, but he lied like a dog and he won. And Chris replied, "That sounds good to me." And he was right. Chris schemed. He plotted. He had backup plans. He kept his own emotions in check while encouraging others to think with theirs. He pretended to be nice while readying the knife that would go into his opponent's back, even if he had told her she was like a little sister. Simply put, Chris knew how to play Survivor, and he did it very well on pretty much every front. And that is why Chris won.
A great rewatch.
Yes. Yes, it was. All right. Well.
And I have to mention one more thing.
Okay.
Because you made me think of it when you said that you did. When you said that he picked the best person to sit next to.
Mm-hmm.
This is why the fire making at Final Four is such a bad idea. This right here.
Yes.
One of many reasons, but Jeff even said it too. He said, "You will, in effect, choose your opponent." He said that at the final three, and he was saying that to Chris. And we've lost that with this Final Four fire making challenge. So I'm just throwing that out there that you even said it, Jeff Probst, way back when, that you get to choose the opponent that you will sit next to. Not anymore. Yeah. Anyway, just throwing that out there.
All right. Well, let me remind everyone that the rules we just discussed are available as a poster.
Mm-hmm.
And two different types of t-shirts. Here's one of them. And a mug.
That's right.
So for the shirts or mug, go to robhasawebsite.com or robhasapodcast.com. Click on the merch link, browse through the designs, or search. For the poster, go to tinyurl.com/davidrulesposter2. As we wrap up, I want to encourage people to check out the RHAP patron program at robhasawebsite.com/patron. We are, you know, just a week into a new month, so it's a perfect time to join. Once you do, you'll see that the RHAP patron program has so many different ways to have fun and interact. Patron family feud, patron mafia, and much more. There's a patron-only follow-up podcast for each Survivor season in the countdown. There's still monthly patron call-in shows, a weekly Q&A show with Nicole. And when Rob isn't talking directly to everyone, there are Facebook groups to keep you occupied with a great community of people, including both of us, where you could, talk about Survivor, Big Brother, The Circle, which just finished, or life in general. Remember to go to robhasawebsite.com/patron. And once you get to the Facebook groups, make sure to say hello.
And you can also say hello to us on Twitter. I am at JessicaLewis89, which is here, as you can see. And he is at David Bloomberg. You should follow us both because then you get both sides of all the fun things that we chat about. And once Survivor finally starts again, if they're not all stuck in Fiji for the rest of their lives, then we live tweet during the episode. So that's a great thing to be involved in as well. So that, again, I am at JessicaLewis89 and he is at David Bloomberg.
Yes. Now, for those of you with iPhones or iPads, there's also I've mentioned the newer social media outlet that which is Clubhouse. While Jessica still waiting for them to open up to Android users, you can find me on there as at David Bloomberg. There's a very active RHAP club and other RHAP followers. I still have invitations I can give out. So if you need one, hit me up on social media.
Yeah.
Getting back to Twitter. The hashtag, of course, is WhyChrisWon, and the hashtag for the podcast overall, WhyXLost. Make sure you're subscribed to all of the RHAP Survivor podcasts at robhasapodcast.com/survivor or on your favorite podcatcher. We are also on the reality TV Rehapups feed, and in both places, you can find a wide variety of great content, including, of course, the Survivor season countdown.
That's right. And we should say thank you to Scott St. Pierre, who does all of the editing for this Why Blank Lost podcast. So thank you so much, Scott, for both the video, audio version editing that you do. And also thank you to Will from America for the incredible theme song that was created and mentions us both, which is quite fun. And it's very catchy. So thank you, Will, for creating that for us. We do love it. And thank you, David, for another fun Why Blank Lost podcast, or Why Blank One, should say. I will say that this was an unexpected, very enjoyable rewatch. And I was happy that we got to go through this one because I do think that Chris deserves some credit for his win. And we got to do that. So
yeah.
Thanks.
Yeah. Well, thank you again for joining me to talk Survivor. It's interesting because as I look at the time, you know, it's less than an hour and a half when the past few that we've done where we've talked about, you know, the why the heck ones are like 2 hours long.
Yeah.
And I've always said, people say, well, how does it, you know, why is there that difference? And the answer is when someone does so much right, you could just say they did this right and give some examples. When someone does a bunch of stuff wrong and you have to explain how they still won, mm-hmm. it takes longer.
Yes.
You know, because you have to say, well, they did all this wrong, but this other stuff happened.
And also, there was only two people in the final two.
Well, that's
there's
true
that
too.
As well.
Although I think last time we barely mentioned the third finalist. So
that is true.
Which I should mention. Thank you to everyone who told us how wrong we were about the third place people getting, you know, zero votes.
I told people to tell us that we were wrong.
And yes, that's what I said. And they did. And I appreciate mm-hmm. it. This is why we let Jordan handle the Survivor trivia, not us.
Yes, exactly. Because there's only so much that I can cram into my brain when it comes to Survivor.
Yeah, it just starts falling out. Mm-hmm. But some people did say that even though we were wrong about that, it made the point that even if someone got a couple of votes, in almost every case, they were nowhere near the winning.
It didn't matter.
Mm-hmm. Right. So anyway, as we move forward with the countdown, my guess it'll be a few weeks before the next one. But everyone, keep your eyes open for when that happens. Mm-hmm. And we will see everyone soon for the next look at Why Somebody Won.
That's right.
Bye.
Bye.
David and Jessica will turn it around. They'll break down the rules and they'll show you how. You played yourself and got voted out. This is Why Blank Lost.
and this is why blind lost.
Oh, baby, this is why blind lost.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kid's PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky?
No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.